Thank you for joining us today. You are listening to Crossing Cultures with Phil Metzger. You can connect with us on social media at Crossing Cultures or by visiting crossingculture.org. Make sure to stick around after today's message for a discussion with Phil and our special guest.
Super Apostles is dripping with the sarcasm of our writer, the Apostle Paul. Now, I want to take you through this a little bit. When Jesus rose from the dead, he called his disciples to go out into the world and make more disciples in his name. This has been the process since the days of Jesus. He invested his heart and his life and his words into a group of people, men and women. They got it. They understood the gospel. They understood what Jesus had done for them. He rose from the dead, conquered death and hell and sin and the devil, and then he sent them out to do the exact same thing that he had been doing. So over and over and over. And this is how the church has worked for 2,000 years. It's really important to understand something, though, and it's going to come into play here in our passage. It's this. When God asks you to be a part of something or to do something or to, then he also promises to give you the ability to do the thing that he's asking you to do. So Jesus does not say to the disciples, follow me, and then not give them the ability to follow him. It's unlike anyone else in human history. When God calls you and me to something, he will give you the ability to do it. And so we say, oh, I could never share my faith. Yes, you can. You know how? God, if you're open to that, God will give you the ability to do it. And so, in fact, Jesus even said this, I'll give you the words to speak when the time comes. Now, this is not my attempt to try to guilt you into doing more and being more Christian and all that kind of stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. What I am saying is this, is that if you feel a sense of God wanting to do something in your life, you can know this. He'll give you the power to do that thing as well. You know, he didn't ask Lazarus to come out of the grave. He was dead, by the way. Dead people don't get out of graves. He gave him the ability to do what he was asking him to do. And that's going to be true in every single one of our lives. Now, here was the problem. So God called Paul, and Paul was traveling around most parts of Asia and Europe, preaching the gospel and starting churches. But there was a group of people who would usually come after him. And Paul had a few names for them. Some of them we can repeat. Okay, Judaizers is one of them. He called them Judaizers. And what he meant by that was this. These were Christian men who claimed a title or a role, and then as soon as Paul would leave the church, they would step in there and they'd say, we are Christian leaders and we're Jewish, which means we have more authority for some reason, and people bought into that. Paul would write to these believers and say, watch out for these people. Watch out for these people who are giving themselves titles and charging you money and doing all this ridiculous stuff in the name of God. None of it has anything to do with God. And so what has been a problem in the world we live in today was a problem back then. And think about it. This is 25 years after Jesus rose again. Sometimes I think I get the idea, or we get the idea that, like, oh man, things are super messed up now because it's been 2,000 years. Dude, they were messed up in 20 years. So congratulations. Our ability to mess things up is decades, not centuries. The church was having serious problems, and we're going to see a little bit of that and find some hope. Now, I'm going to read beginning in verse 1, and I'm reading from the New Living Translation. I hope you will put up with a little more of my foolishness. Please bear with me, for I am jealous for you with the jealousy of God himself. I promised you as a pure bride to one husband, Christ. Paul grew up in a Jewish home, and it was expected that he was going to rise the ranks of Jewish religious leadership, and he did. Paul was on track to being one of the senior leaders within the Jewish faith. And with that, Paul understood something that so deep and just dark in religion. It's all about self-promotion. Paul was having to constantly promote himself. Look at what I've done. Look at my righteousness. Look at my zeal. Look at the things that I'm willing to persecute Christians. I will do this, and I will never eat this, and I will say this, and I will never say this, and I will live this way, and I will never live. It was all about man-made personal attention. I did this or I didn't do this. And friends, by the time that Paul met Jesus, he was disgusted with that whole thing. He was disgusted with it. He meets Jesus and Jesus says, "You're kicking against me. You're fighting against me." And he met Jesus on that road, but it did something in him for the rest of his life. He had a hard time telling his own story of things that he was doing that were good. This is the same man that wrote half of the New Testament, but he struggled to tell people the good things that he was doing because he didn't want it to be about himself. Now, notice what he says there. He says, "I have a jealousy, a godly jealousy for you." And I want to read to you a definition from Psychology Today. It's a great definition on jealousy. It's a complex emotion that encompasses feelings ranging from suspicion to rage to fear to humiliation. Jealousy strikes people of all ages, genders, and sexual orientations. And it's most typically aroused when a person perceives a threat to a valued relationship from a third party. The threat may be real or imagined. All throughout the Bible, we read about people who were jealous and it ended bad. Just think of the very beginning, Cain and Abel. Cain was jealous of his brother, so he killed him. Think of King Saul, who got jealous of David, so he tried to kill him. Jealousy in the heart of humanity moves us towards rage, towards anger, towards these things. But the Bible also says that God is jealous. In fact, Exodus chapter 20, verse 5 says this, "For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." It means this, God is not willing to share you with anyone else. Now, it's strange how we can say that at church on Sunday, and some of you will be like, "Oh, yeah, that's really cool, that's really cool." But if a person in the world were to say that to you, you would say, "This is creepy, it's probably illegal," right? "I love you so much, and I don't want to share you with anyone." If that ever happens on a first date, girls, run, run, run. Guys, run, all of you, just run away, right? "I love you so much, I'm not going to share you." This is like a Misery, if you saw that movie, or fate, you know. This is what's happening, ankle breaking. If you don't know, you'll figure it out, okay. This is dark. It's ugly. And so why is it okay when God says he's a jealous God? Why is it okay for God to want all of your attention? But if anybody else said that, it's creepy. Simple reason. When God gets all of you, you get the best version of you in Christ. You become the best of who you were made to be. You have a sense of security because your identity is wrapped up in who Christ is. You have a sense of purpose because it's connected to his mission and his vision. There's something that happens when you and I decide to go all in with Jesus. You can't do it once. We got to do it every day. We got to do it all the time. But when God says, "I'm jealous for you," it's not either creepy or illegal or weird. It is the most beautiful, selfless expression of himself that he could say. "I want you to have everything that you could possibly have, and you're going to get that by being in me." That's what the Lord is saying here. God loves you so much that he does not want you to share your affections with anyone else, because to do so is to cheapen what he made you and what he saved you for. And if it's not clear, you should see it. At the cross, Jesus would die for you and me so that the very thing that pushed us away from him would be what draws us back into a relationship with him. Our anger, our sin, our wrath, our guilt. He would use that, die for us, and then that power of him being raised from the dead would transform you and I when we put our faith in him. It's a powerful thing. Think about how genuinely loved by God you are. So when Paul says here, and I was thinking about that song by John McMillan, "He is jealous for me, loves like a hurricane. I'm a tree bending beneath the weight of his wind and his mercy." God's jealous for you. And Paul says, "I'm jealous for you in the way God is jealous for you. I'm not trying to control you. I don't want to manipulate you. No ankle breaking, none of that kind of stuff. I want you to thrive. And I don't want anything in return." But the problem is that's not the kind of world you and I are used to living in. We're not used to somebody saying, "I want to bless you and get nothing in return." We're like, "Yeah, really, what's the catch? What's the real catch?" No, I just want... And anybody who says that eventually won't say that. That's just the way we are as human beings. And yet here's Paul saying to these believers, "I just want you to be blessed." Verse 3. "But I fear that somehow your pure and undivided devotion to Christ will be corrupted. Just as Eve was deceived by the cunning ways of the serpent, you happily put up with whatever anyone tells you. Even if they preach a different Jesus than the one we preach, or a different spirit than the one you received, or a different kind of gospel than the one you believed. Let me make a couple comments here. First of all, he talks about how Eve was deceived by the devil, meaning Eve was too smart to just be fooled, or just, you know, the devil didn't say, hey, you should eat this, and Eve's like, okay, cool. No, she was deceived. And Paul says, church, be careful that you're not deceived. You're smart. You're thinking, but be careful that you're not being deceived. You know, people love to quote this, you know, well, don't forget, Eve was deceived. And guys, don't forget that Adam just full-on disobeyed. He didn't even need to be deceived. He just ate. Eve was like, I don't know. Adam's like, just give it to me. So the problem, the quandary that we have as men and women is very, very real. Paul's concern was that these teachers were coming in after he had spoken, and they were taking things that he said, and they were just changing one thing, half a thing. And then when people would say, wait, that's not what Paul taught us, these guys would say, oh, yeah. But you know, I mean, we come from Jerusalem. Paul's not from the Jerusalem church. We come from the Mecca of churches. And so you can trust us. Paul does a great job at helping you get started, but we can take you further. That was the false things that they were saying. And in fact, Paul mentions three things. He says they preach a different Jesus, it's a different spirit, and it's a different gospel. And the very word or the very idea of different, you got to remember, it's like two books, a red book and a blue book. They're both books, but one's a different color, and it is totally different topics. So it's possible to be speaking about Jesus but not be speaking about our Jesus from the scriptures. And I'll just give a couple examples, and I don't intend to be mean or mean-spirited, but I would say that in the Mormon religion, they speak often about Jesus, but it's not the same Jesus that we speak about in our scriptures. It's not the same Jesus. It's like reading two books where they both have a character named John. It doesn't mean it's the same person. It's two different people. And when people talk about Jesus, and let me make another mention, in the Jehovah's Witness religion, they speak often of Jesus, but it's a different Jesus. It's not the same Jesus. He doesn't share the same qualities. He doesn't share the same character. He doesn't share the same divinity. It can't be the same person. It's like two people named John, one's 6'8" and one's, you know, 5'7". They're not the same person. They just share a name. And there's those who preach a different gospel. They say things that seem so close, and then just at the end, it twists just a little bit. And we were doing this on Wednesday night. We were talking about false Christian statements that are not actually biblical. One of them was, God, I won't mention the other one, but I'll mention one of them. God helps those who help themselves. You ever heard that before? That is so unbiblical and not the gospel. The gospel says this, God has to help all of us because we're helpless. It's not God helps those who help themselves. Good luck with that. And so anyone that would attach what you need to do now, hey, you're a Christian, you need to be better. Well, good luck with that. Hey, you're a Christian, you need to do this or you need to do that. The faith that we believe in is not about what you do. It's all wrapped up in the fact that God has already made a path through his son Jesus for you and me to be born again. You can't earn what God wants to give you freely. How annoying is that when you're like, hey, it's a gift, and they're like, I'll pay you for it. Bro, I just told you it's a gift. Oh, no, I'll pay you for it. Now I'm mad. Right? Aren't you glad God doesn't get mad like that, right? I just want to bless you. I just want to give it to you. No, God, I will show you that I've earned this. But you can't. And he's not expecting you to. So there are different Jesuses, different spirit, different gospels. In fact, let me take it a little bit more personal, a little bit more sensitive. It's this. A different gospel doesn't always mean just different information. It can also mean different ideology, different philosophy, different character. I know plenty of guys in doing what I do and preaching the gospel, and they say the same words, but their ideology is so different. Their ideology, I'll mention what I mean by that in just a second, or those who, their information is correct, but their character is lacking. That's a problem. That's a different gospel. When I can say to you, here's the gospel, but don't look at me. Don't look at my life. There's something wrong with that. When Paul himself said, follow me as I follow Christ.
You are listening to Crossing Cultures with Phil Metzger. If this ministry has added value to you and you would like to hear more content, you can subscribe at our Crossing Cultures podcast or visit us online at www.crossingculture.org. If you would like to support us financially, you can do that on our website at www.crossingculture.org. Now let's get back into today's message.
All of us believe, and it's kind of a myth, right? And it's good to, I think so much of our Christian faith is about ruining the myths that can hold us back. One of them is this: we are the purest form of Christianity. That's a myth. If Jesus doesn't come back and there's another 100 years of Christianity, they will be writing all kinds of books about how we got it wrong. Not the gospel, but in different ways. Different ideologies that we grabbed onto. Different philosophies that we've grabbed onto. I can tell you personally how easy it is we think that we come in non-biased, but all of us come in with our own national identity and our own national ideology and our own family ideology, and we think, oh, this is the gospel. But friends, the gospel is this. God became one of us, died for all of us, so that any one of us could put their faith in him. Any other little ideology that gets caught on to that is not the gospel. And so, yes, we need to do exactly what the disciples did when Jesus said, one of you will betray me. You know what they said? First, second time, not so much. First time, is it me? Can I encourage you, and I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, then we're going to move forward. I think one of the most important elements of what it means to be a Christian is that you have become somebody who can learn reflectively. In other words, you're not just saying, oh, those people, but you're saying, man, I need to grow. I need to change. And when that happens, you have impact on the people around you. But we're so busy, like, oh, that guy's messed up and this girl's messed up. And they're looking at you, and and we have this weird notion today in our version of Christianity that if people see that I'm doing good, they might want Jesus. Let me just tell you, they know you're not doing good. People already know that. It's okay to be authentic, and authenticity needs to be contrasted with something that is artificial or fake, and that's what was happening here in the city of Corinth. Verse 5, I don't consider myself inferior in any way to these super apostles who teach such things. This is dripping with sarcasm, okay? He doesn't mean it like they're actually super. He means they're super lame. In fact, in a minute, he's going to call them false teachers. He is being incredibly sarcastic here. Verse 6, I may be unskilled as a speaker, but I'm not lacking in knowledge. We've made this clear to you in every possible way. Was I wrong when I humbled myself and honored you by preaching God's good news to you without expecting anything in return? I robbed other churches by accepting their contribution so I could serve you at no cost. And when I was with you and didn't have enough to live on, I did not become a financial burden to anyone. The brothers who came from Macedonia brought me all I needed. I've never been a burden to you, and I never will be. As surely as the truth of Christ is in me, no one in all of Greece will ever stop me from boasting about this. Why? Because I don't love you? God knows that I do. Super apostles is the term that Paul uses, dripping with frustration, to describe this group of people who came in saying, hey, if you pay us a fee, if you will put us up and if you'll feed us well, then we're going to come in and teach you the deeper things of God. And they were charging exorbitant rates. And that's the way it works in the world, right? If something costs more, right? If Disneyland raises their prices, we imagine it must be worth it. Right? Or the movie prices went up, and we think it's worth it. Or that concert, man, that concert's going to be so expensive. It's going to be worth it. It's going to be amazing, right? And when they say, hey, it's going to be a free concert, you're like, lame. Questionable. Right? Because we associate value with money. And this is the problem. Listen, this was the problem that they were having in Corinth. Here's the truth. In God's kingdom, money's nothing. It just doesn't matter. Value is not in how much it costs you. Listen, you ready? Value is in the fact that it costs God everything. You're not going to like buy, look at the kingdom of God. I could buy. So you can't do it. It's freely given because you could never earn it. So what a hell it would be for you and me if the whole Christian faith was about attempting to live up to a standard you never could, and ultimately God just not accepting anyone. The gospel is that he accepts us because of who he is, not because of who we are. And so this mindset was so contrary. It was so opposite. The kingdom of God is free. And everybody's like, well, what's that worth? All these Corinthian Christians were like, we want the guy that charges all that money because he's definitely going to be good. If I lose all my money, this guy's going to be great. What a weird way of thinking. And yet that's what was happening. That's the way things quite often are in a worldly context. Paul charged nothing. He was never a burden to anybody. And he says, but you think I don't love you? Dude, I haven't charged you anything, and you're saying I don't love you? God knows that I do. And he's frustrated. He's literally walked, and I mean actually walked, around large portions of Asia and Europe preaching the gospel. When he's not doing that, he's imprisoned. And while he's imprisoned, he's writing letters to the Christians, which we call the New Testament. This dude loved people, and yet they were discrediting him because he wasn't living up to their standards of how things would be. And, you know, I was thinking about this quite a bit recently because, you know, kind of a side note, but I've got two brothers, two stepsisters, two stepbrothers, and a sister. There will be a test later, so remember these. But, you know, really successful people. One's a nurse, one's a cop, one's a teacher, one's a colonel in the Air Force, one works for the government. The other one's a coder. I have no idea what he does, but he makes money, doing that kind of stuff. And then the other one is a salesman. And then COVID hit. And besides the cop and the nurse, the rest of us were like, what are we doing? In fact, I would say this, 2020 and 2021, the whole world has been hit by this one question. What am I worth? It's really frustrating when the whole world and all of our businesses and all of our places could say this to us. Hey, why don't you just go home and stay there for a while? Oh, I'm ready to work. Nah, just stay home. That's how valuable you are in 2020 and 2021. Just stay home. We're good. We don't need you. And of course, there's a lot of other factors that were going on, but I have spent more time with people who are questioning their own identity. What am I worth if nobody needs me? What am I worth if no? And one of my brothers, he thinks he's really funny. He kind of is. Don't tell him. He always says this to me. You only work one day a week anyways. So, yeah, he's a terrible person. But we all are wrestling. I mean, 2020, 2021, the wrestle of like, what am I worth? What are you worth? And it's a really difficult question to answer when you're getting it from the way the world works. And it's as if God is forcing you and me to realign ourselves to his priorities. What are you worth? Friends, if you're looking at this from the perspective of God, you are priceless. There's no job that you could ever work that makes you famous or rich or important or powerful or that cures cancer that would make God love you more than he already does, because it cost him his son to love you, and that's everything to him. You're already loved. And yet here in Corinth, there were people who were just, they were pushing themselves. They were pushing themselves. Just listen to me. Look at my papers and my degrees and all the things I've done and all these things and just pushing themselves. And Paul calls them the super apostles, also known as false apostles in his mind, because they're just pushing themselves. They're telling you that they're worth something, but they're really not.
You're listening to Crossing Cultures with Phil Metzger. If this ministry has added value to you and you would like to hear more content, you can subscribe to our Crossing Cultures podcast or visit us online at crossingculture.org or philmetzger.com. Next week will be our last episode on the radio. However, we still have episodes and more content coming soon. Make sure you subscribe to our Crossing Cultures podcast and YouTube channel. Let's get back into today's message.
If you guys remember, there was a comedian like 10 years ago. He's probably still around, Brian Regan. He did this little clip he called the Me Monster. Okay, the me monster is, there's always those people in our lives that when you tell your story, they're just waiting for you to finish. So then they can tell their better story than yours. Like, your story was dumb, let me tell you mine. And there's always these kind of people. And he has this little clip where he talks about his fantasy would be to have been one of the 12 men that walked on the moon, because they could always one-up everybody's stories, always. This is what was happening in Corinth. Pay me. Feed me, give me nice things, and then all of a sudden, we're more valuable than the guy who is not willing to take anything, because you see, that's how it works in the world. If you don't take then you must not be that good. You must not be that important. You must not be that valuable. And Paul was unwilling to take from them. He hated the idea that he would have to benefit from something that was given freely to him. He wanted to give it freely to them. Verse 12, but I will continue doing what I have always done. This will undercut those who are looking for an opportunity to boast that their work is just like ours. These people are false apostles. They're deceitful workers who disguise themselves as apostles. I'm not surprised. Even Satan disguised himself as an angel of light. It's no wonder that his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. In the end, they will get the punishment their wicked deeds deserve. So they went from being super apostles to false apostles to deceitful workers who are just like Satan. That's a really quick drop. Because that's how Paul really saw and understood these people to be. And I want to wrap up here and make sure that we take away the right things. Because the worst thing that you could do would be this to be your takeaway. Okay, watch out for false teachers. I don't think that's what we're here for today. I don't believe that's the message that we need to walk away with. Because a false teaching can even be a bad ideology or a bad philosophy. A person can say the right things, but if they're not living the truth, we should be concerned. But I don't think this is the message that we're supposed to walk away with. It's this. There is a real gospel message out there. It's the message of the love of God for each one of you. That is it costs you nothing, but it cost Jesus everything, and he paid it willingly. And don't get caught up in that, oh God, I wish it didn't cost you so much. Too late, already done, he loves you. The moral of our story today is this. You can't make yourself valuable by what you do. Oh, I'm married. Oh, I'm single. Oh, I have a powerful job. None of that defines your value. Now, it does if you let the world define your value, right? So if you let people tell you what you're worth, then that's what you're worth. But if you'll let the Lord tell you what you're worth, he'll tell you this. You're priceless. You're priceless. He would do it again and again and again and again and again for you. And so if I could encourage you on something as we walk out of here, it would be this. To remember that he loves you. That you're loved by God. You're valued by God. Not for what you do or don't do. Could we be better? Sure. But that's not what defines us. Today, at this moment, you're loved and you're valued by God. I want you to consider the love of God, that he's jealous for you, that he loves you so much that he doesn't want to share you, because when you give everything you have to him, then you experience the fullness of joy and peace and value and purpose. You get everything when you give yourself fully to the Lord. You fight to make your marriage better, great, but give yourself to the Lord. You fight to find the right person, great, but you give yourself to the Lord. You work hard at your job and you want to do the best and you want to get the promotions and all, great, but you give yourself over to God because no one will love you like he does.
Crossing Cultures is focused on helping Christians learn how to connect to those who may live, believe, or think differently than they do. We would love for you to partner with us financially as we seek to take the gospel locally and globally. You can do so by visiting us online at crossingculture.org. We would love to send you a gift for your donation of any amount. Next week is our last episode here on the radio. Our plan is to finish our series in 2 Corinthians and continue having conversations with people who may live, believe, or think differently than we do. So make sure to subscribe to our Crossing Cultures podcast and YouTube channel for more content. Up next, we have part one of our previous episode titled Understanding Special Needs. You can find part two of this episode on our Crossing Cultures podcast.
I'm really excited about this episode, these next couple episodes, I should say, because we are with a special guest, Michelle Sullivan. But I want to let my really special guest, my amazing wife, Joy, introduce Michelle. And I know this episode, these next couple episodes are really a passion of yours. So why don't you introduce Michelle and you can get us going on this.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is my first time on a podcast, so I'm new to this. And I'm excited to invite or to introduce Michelle, who's not new to the podcast world. And I really am excited for her to share about her podcast that she has, that she started after inspiration of her son. And I don't want to say anything incorrectly, but a long story short, Michelle and I went to high school together. And so it's just such a crazy worlds colliding. And I have so many special friends who have children or people in their life with special needs or who learn differently. And it is something that I'm passionate about. I want to continue to be learning. Something I learned, I was able to learn through many of our beautiful families in Budapest, and now moving here to San Diego, just trying to grapple with it and understand it and learn from families. And so I've learned so much, Michelle, from your podcast and Advocate Like a Mother. And I just
it's the best podcast name
a great title.
I've ever heard. And it's called Advocate Like a Mother. It is fantastic. I love it.
Because there's no advocator better than a mother. And but I would love, Michelle, if you would, because I don't want to take away from your, I want just like tell us like your journey, like even as you got married and you had your girls and then you had Eli and just how this whole podcast even birthed and we just want to get to know you and hear your story. So this is Michelle.
Hi guys. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it. My name is Michelle Sullivan. I have a podcast called Advocate Like a Mother, and I own a clothing line called Littlest Warrior, and it's inspired by my son, Eli. He is 7 and he has Down syndrome. You know, like Joy mentioned, I went to school with her. I grew up at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, and, you know, just my experience growing up there was just, I was never exposed to anyone with disabilities.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's necessarily the church's fault, but, you know, obviously, talking about private school, that could be a whole discussion for another day. But just growing up, I was never exposed to that. I got married at 17. I was married a couple months before you guys.
Wow.
Straight
amazing.
Out of high school.
Yep. So cool.
Yeah. And so, and that's a little fun story too on the side, just, you know, knowing that you guys got married too. You guys were the only other couple we knew that were married so young. And so that was kind of fun to know, okay, there's someone else crazy like us.
We're not that crazy, but maybe we are crazy.
All right. So we had, you know, we got married, had our 3 girls. Life was very typical, you know, and it's funny saying that word. I have recently been listening to a few of, you know, your podcast, and the one in particular that I'm thinking of is What is Culture? I think it was part 2, and just in there, you guys are just talking about like just what, you know, people think of as a normal experience for, you know, a typical white person living in North America. And we just kind of think of ourselves as we're normal and everyone else is having a, you know, a different experience and it's not normal like ours. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my girls grew up, they went to private school, everything seemed very typical. And then we decided we wanted to add another baby to our family. And we actually had to kind of go through, that's a whole another story in and of itself, but my husband had to get a vasectomy reversal to make that happen. We wanted to adopt. We like went down that road and God just kept closing the door and we didn't understand. And so we kind of just sat down and thought about our options. And so we prayed about it and God just totally opened the door for him to get a reversal. And we're like, okay. And so they told us, you know, chances are it probably won't happen, but if it does, it would take at least a year for you to get pregnant. Well, I got pregnant the first month. And so I was like, okay, clearly God wants this baby here. Mm-hmm. And so we were getting ready for my 20-week ultrasound, and I just felt just this anxiety, just so much anxiety bubbling up in me. And, you know, I confided in a couple friends. I said, I think something's wrong with the baby. And they're like, oh my gosh, you know, nothing's wrong with the baby. You're just, you know, just don't worry about it. Everything's fine. And kind of, I'll backtrack a little bit before, when we were deciding, kind of weighing our options of whether we should keep pursuing adoption or, do the vasectomy reversal, I told Eric, I said, I really think that if we do this, the baby's going to have Down syndrome. And he's like, no. And he went and like crunched the numbers. He came back. He's like, our chances of having a baby with Down syndrome are like 0.3. It's not going to happen.
Wow.
Don't worry about it. And I was like, I don't know. I'm just telling you that I have a feeling. And he's like, no. And so I just kept thinking about that in the back of my mind before we went to the ultrasound.
Man.
And so we went, and as soon as they put the little wand on my belly and I looked at the screen, I knew, I saw his belly and there was like these two dark spots. And I, you know, you could see the tech's face. She couldn't say anything. But, you know, at first she was like, oh, it's small talk. And then all of a sudden, just quiet demeanor. And so I just knew. And so I'm just, tears are just streaming down my face. And I just remember saying, God, like, you know, like, fix him, please, like, heal him, like, you know, do whatever you need to do, like, please. And so the next day we found out that our doctor called and he said, you need to come in for like a more thorough ultrasound, but we found several markers. We found a heart defect, fluid on the brain, and then the two dark spots that I saw, they're called double bubble. It's for duodenal atresia, which means his intestines were blocked. And so we went in for the next day for an ultrasound. We brought our girls with us, and the doctor, you know, immediately was like, your child has some sort of trisomy. We can just go upstairs and take care of this. And the girls were old enough to knew exactly what that meant. And so that was like our first experience of like discrimination of like, this is our baby and my daughters are standing right here and we love him. Like,
And so the doctor saw it as just a, hey, we can fix this problem.
Kind of like a mole. Oh, just go upstairs. We'll just remove it real quick. And I remember her saying, yeah, you can just, you know, try again next month. And it's just like, oh, this is my baby. I just remember just walking out of the room, just like, I just felt like I was in a dark tunnel and I was just like closing in, just like, how, like, I can't even believe that people are treating my child like this, you know? And so that kind of started us on our journey of just like, okay, God, like, what does this mean? Like, and I remember God very clearly saying, like, I do not make mistakes. I don't make mistakes. And so I just, okay, I trust you. And so he was, so another thing I should probably bring up is the doctor said, you know, very, puts, instilled a lot of fear in us, said that, okay, well, if you choose this, chances are your baby's going to be stillborn, or his heart defect is just so severe that, you know, chances are he just won't live. You know, he'll die before he even gets his heart surgery. And so my girls had that in the back of their mind, you know, and, you know, for whatever reason, I did take that to heart and I believed that, you know, I should have just trusted God, but I, you know, I'm listening to this doctor tell me these things. And so, you know, so it was really, it was a scary pregnancy. I feel like I really couldn't enjoy it because it was just so fear filled, you know, lots of doctor's appointments, lots of, you know, we had to start seeing the pediatric cardiologist before he was even born, and just, you know, just so much fear. So, but anyway, he was born. He weighed 4 pounds, 3 ounces, tiny little guy. He was full term. He's tiny, tiny little guy. I got to kiss him before they took him off to the NICU. He ended up having his open heart surgery when he was 6 months old. He started to go into heart failure. And so that was scary. He had a G tube. And so we just kept dumping food in there, believing in faith that he was going to get, they wanted him to weigh 8 pounds for him to be able to have the surgery. And he literally weighed eight pounds that week. Like, God was like, here you go.
He's like getting ready for like a meet or wrestling.
Yeah,
you're like feeding him.
That's what it felt like. That's totally what it felt like. And so I feel like once he survived his heart surgery, I feel like, I liken it to like, I felt like I was holding my breath for those 6 months. Like, I was just like, okay, God, like, I trust you, but I'm so scared. But, you know, it was just like, I was like, I could finally breathe. Like, okay. Like, he's gonna live. And so, yeah. So then we, you know, kind of after he survived that, then I was like, okay, we've got work to do. We've got to show the world his worth. And so I started a clothing company that just kind of like has messages on the shirts that basically say, I'm not suffering.
Yeah, don't feel bad for me.
Yeah, don't feel sorry for us. Yeah, yes, that was another thing so I should probably mention is when I was pregnant, I won't say who, but there was a certain family member that is a believer that took me to pro, you know, life rallies and gave me picket signs to hold and basically told me, well, you're going to terminate the pregnancy, right? The baby's only going to suffer. And so just that idea of just like, here's this person who is a believer that loves the Lord, but just believes this cultural lie that just because he's a little different, he's going to suffer. And so just, I just really wanted to get that message across that no, he is not suffering.
Wow. And that's so powerful because, you know, one of the things we try to talk about a lot on this is like when people, when you see something as an issue, it's easy to like separate yourself. So it's almost like that person saw this as an issue. They weren't seeing this beautiful little boy. They were seeing an issue. And boy, it's you're humanizing and normalizing people rather than an issue. And it's making such a difference. What's the name of the clothing line? I want to make sure we pop that up because it's super cool.
Yeah, it's called Littlest Warrior.
Littlest Warrior. I love it.
And what a warrior he is. Yes, absolutely.
So yeah, so then, so he has the surgery. How did you, I mean, a lot of people have kids that have Down syndrome, but you guys really took a front step. I mean, you guys stepped forward to advocating and to being an example and to all of that. How did that all come about?
I just saw it as a need that needed to be filled. And it's been really cool. Like after, so he's seven now and just even thinking back to when he was little, there weren't very many Instagram accounts who, you know, had kids with, you know, Down syndrome that were like proudly displaying their kids. And it's just like, now it's just like, I open my Instagram and it's just, every day I find a new account and it's just so cool to see. It's just basically exploded just with like people just shouting their kids' worth and just like, you know, just being an example. I mean, I just feel like, you know, sometimes when people think of the word advocate, they think of just like, you know, strong, loud voices. And I'm like, no, you can advocate in so many different ways. And just posting a picture of your kid and talking about how much you love them and how much they enjoy their life, like that's advocating for their life. And and I can't even tell you the amount of messages that I've gotten from people saying, you know, I told my sister about your account and she was going to abort the baby, but now she's going to keep them. And it's just, I get messages like that all the time. And it's just like so cool to think just through Instagram, through social media, just posting pictures, you know, we're saving lives. And it's just so cool.
I didn't even think about what an opportunity you have in that sense of like validating, truly understanding the beauty of life, you know, the unborn child and, you know, having any kind of diagnosis. My thought is how I've seen just your advocacy of teaching us the to value human life, how different. And I feel like this past year or 2 years, we've talked so much about validating different people, different culture, different race. And we want to learn. We want to learn how to see things in light of different, not being bad, but being something that we can value and appreciate and grow from and learn from and actually benefit from. And so I think like how you guys have pivoted and let little Eli, this little warrior, impact your family and then therefore impact our family and impact all so many around, like that is what it's all about. And I just commend you, Michelle. Like that's, it's powerful. Like just being able to let that not make you a victim, but make you like someone like, I'm in this game. Like I'm going to be a part of like bringing change. And I love that. That's, I love that heart.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I have a question for you. And we were chatting a little bit about it and I want to hear more about your story. So I don't want to cut you off. But it's such a huge part of like just your journey. And as you've started with the clothing line and with the podcast and giving other moms, it seems like, and dads a voice to talk about their children who have different learning abilities or disabilities, different ways of, that they function that aren't normal, you know, and I know that as we're on our journey here in San Diego and as and within the church and the private school, we're part of both and we're not here to condemn it. We're here to learn. We're here to understand. And like, I would love to ask you as a mom And as someone who's in this kind of this sphere, that we're also wanting to learn and understand, like, how can we as a church, what could we do better? What could we do better for families like you, for people like Eli, for young adults, for children? I mean, I know it's a big question, and I know that there's so many different scenarios involved, but we honestly want to understand and grow. That's why we have these podcasts, mm-hmm. is maybe not to come up with, like, we're going to finalize and, you know, resolve the world issues, but we want to open a conversation for understanding and learning, you know? Right. So what would you suggest? Like, do you have some thoughts or experiences, like, within, specifically within the church and Christians?
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as the church goes, I think having a posture of just not having all the answers and not okay. thinking what you know right now is best, and just being willing to learn and change and grow. I remember when Eli was probably a couple years old, a woman reached out to me, and she's like, oh, you got to come to our church. We have an amazing special needs program. And I remember being so excited. And then I go to the church, and it's literally the farthest back room they could have picked. And they're all just, you know, all the people with disabilities are just crammed into a room together, all ages, you know, the babies were with the adults. And, wow. and she was so proud. And it's just, and I, you know, I didn't say anything, because I just remember, like, trying to process it.
Sure.
You know, mm-hmm. Eli's still really little. I hadn't really been exposed to much, but I just remember thinking, this doesn't feel right, but I couldn't mm-hmm. really express mm-hmm. why, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as Eli's gotten older, I've heard so many amazing stories of churches where I know that there is this one congregation where there is a man, I believe he has cerebral palsy and mm-hmm. probably another diagnosis, and he made quite a bit of noise, you know, during mm-hmm. the service. And, yeah. you know, at first people were very upset, and so they'd mm-hmm. make him go outside. And finally, the pastor just took a stance and said, he is a member of our body.
Right.
And he's going to be here, and he's going to worship with us. And if you have a problem with that, I'm sorry, but you can leave. He's going to stay. And I just remember that being so powerful, and just being like, wow, that's what this is about. Like, we are all members of one body. Not everyone is the same. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, about being what's normal and what's, you know, just our experience. Just because we live life one way does not mean that's the right way.
Right.
And so just, like, you know, for the church just to embrace everyone and, you know, to get uncomfortable,
yes.
you know, to be okay with being uncomfortable.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know?
And can we unpack that just a little bit? Because I want to make it, like, as practical and as real as we can, because I think what you said there is, like, I actually just wrote it down, like, we need to normalize unique. Like, we got to normalize that. But I want to go back to that experience you had. Your Eli's what, 2 when you went to that church?
Yeah. He was pretty little.
So odds are the 2-year-olds weren't in with 15-year-olds in the other groups.
Right.
What I'm saying is, so it's like,
right.
So, but then on the other hand, and let me kind of get your thoughts on this, or just how you see this. Like, here's a church, like, they're trying to do something, right? They're trying to do something, but I think the point that you're making is it's okay to try to do something, but to keep that posture of, like, but we still need to learn and grow. So, like, maybe this isn't our best, but we could learn from other people, because, you know, we could do this better. Right. And let me ask you then, how would you, because I think, you know, here I'm a pastor of a church, and most of the people I know kind of take that same mentality of, like, we love people who are unique coming, and we want that. Like, I bring on the people that need to, that communicate differently and that might express themselves in ways that maybe they didn't want to, but their body just does. And, but then how do we get to, you know, helping the families too? Like, it's like, oh, let's have a room, let's do something. But I think there seems to be this whole area of ministry. And I know this has been Joy's heart for so long of, like, how do we minister to to families that are, my guess is, like, desperate for opportunities, desperate for, like, they would love it if there was a great place they could go to.
Right. And kind of just going back to, like, the idea, you know, they are trying, you know, and that, and I'm, mm-hmm. and I don't want to discount that. And I think a lot of times people get caught up on like semantics and other things. And I always try to take the posture of grace and just knowing that the heart behind what they're trying to do is it's there and they really do care. And so I, you know, I want to be able to say that, but mm-hmm. as far as, you know, churches go to help helping families, I think one thing that I think would just be so amazing that families would really love is just having like an individual reach out and like kind of mm-hmm. do like, I know that there's like programs, like kind of like buddy programs
yeah.
where, you know, a teenager will reach out and, you know, kind of take out the individual with the disability and like take them to the movies or mm-hmm. take them to get coffee or something. Mm-hmm. And just more on an individual level, I think that's kind of like where yeah. real, you know, mm-hmm. servanthood can take place.
That's so good. Oh, I love that. And the benefit that that is to that person who partners with the,
right.
with the person with disability.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Because I think that's where, this is what resonates with me so much, that God has just pierced my heart so much, is, and I think a lot of what we've talked about with discrimination and we've talked about with racial discrimination and also people with disability, I think so often as Christians, and again, not as a put down, not as a, I'm not trying to put anyone down, I see it in my own heart, that I'm fine to pity them. I'm fine to feel sorry for the disenfranchised. I'm fine to feel sorry for the minority or for someone who's different from me, but to value them and actually respect them and actually mm-hmm. not only see them as like, oh, I would love to take them out to coffee or I would love to like sit next to them in church and give their parents a break or whatever and like partner with a heart of, I actually have so much I can learn from this person.
Right.
And
right.
that these people are actually a part of the body. And by not only validating, but I think giving space for them, we, I think as believers and so often as a church, and we can only speak for our experiences here, but there is a place that we can do better. Mm-hmm. There is a place that there's, yeah, we've tried, but we can do better. We can keep trying. I don't want to scapegoat and say, well, we've tried. Mm-hmm. I want to keep trying, when, you know, because that's not fair. What about these families who have to do it every single day? And I do believe personally, and just my personal conviction is I'm growing in my own relationship with the Lord and the gospel. There's a great book called Disability and the Gospel, and I really wish I brought it with me because I don't have the author's name off the top of my head.
People can Google it.
Okay. Disability and the Gospel. It's a great book, and it really talks about the aspect of what we're kind of touching right now is actually by excluding people that are different than us in any way, shape, or form, we actually miss out mm-hmm. so much. The entirety of the body is missing like a major part, you know, and we think we're like, I love the word that you were saying, we don't want to be uncomfortable. And it's actually very ironic because yeah. By keeping those uncomfortable parts, if I can use that, and I don't mean that in a disrespect because it's actually so ironic, it's like by pushing those uncomfortable parts out because they speak out or because we don't really know how to handle, you know, their behavior, we're not really sure of our, because of our own insecurities, we actually miss out. They know how to worship. So many of my friends, so many of the people that I know and love who have disability, they know how to worship. There's a freedom that they know of the Lord that I need to learn.
Yeah.
I personally need to learn from them. It's not that I need to teach them. I actually need to learn from them, you know? And I think there is that posture, yes, of humility, and even to take it the next step of like, we have so much more that we can learn from them mm-hmm. if we not only validate, but actually give space for. And that goes in so many different platforms of people that are different from us. Because I think, obviously, it's an obvious statement, and I'm not the first person to say it, and I'm actually still learning it, is if I continue to surround myself with just people who look like me, talk like me, act like me, I live a very small life.
Yeah.
I live a very small world. The more people that I am learning from and experiencing them that are different from me, that look different from me, that have different backgrounds from me, that process different, my world becomes so much fuller.
Mm-hmm.
And my concept of the gospel and of who God is so much richer.
That was part one of our previous episode titled Understanding Special Needs. If you would like to hear the rest of this amazing conversation, make sure to subscribe to our Crossing Cultures podcast or YouTube channel. Thank you for listening to Crossing Cultures with Phil Metzger. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more content, you can subscribe to our podcast, Crossing Cultures. Visit us at crossingculture.org, or you can connect with us on social media. If you live in San Diego, we would love to see you in person. Calvary San Diego meets on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. You can find our address at www.calvarysd.com. We're a new show, and we would love to hear from you. Would you leave us a voice message at 619-500-4772? Again, that's 619-500-4772, and let us know how this show is reaching you. And pray about supporting the ministry of Crossing Cultures in prayer and financially as we seek to connect to those who may live, believe, or think differently than we do for the sake of the gospel. Visit us at crossingculture.org. Thank you for being with us, and we hope you join us next week on Crossing Cultures.